This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show. Truth, because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Joel Elston here. It's Thursday, May 19th, 2016. And this week, we're going to try to help ourselves and you overcome ingrained habits that work against ourselves. And Joel, in this day and age and universe and on this planet, it's really easy to develop ingrained habits that work against our own interests.
That tends to be the biggest number one roadblock for people in learning how to use the law of attraction on their behalf. Oh, yeah. Is the ingrained habits. I really believe that.
I agree with you. And I guess the thing that amazes me is that we as a culture, for the most part, haven't figured it out. I mean, you and I have figured it out. Others who believe in positive thinking and law of attraction and so forth, they've figured it out. And yet the vast majority of people don't seem to notice that we're teaching ourselves and we're teaching each other to ingrain these habits that work against ourselves. We reinforce them over and over throughout our lives, and then we wonder why we have so much trouble changing habits.
Well, and I've often noticed, and in my life and in many of the people that I work with in my life coaching practice, it's the same problems for the same people over and over and over again. I have known people that have relationship problems, and they tend to have the same relationship problem, money problems, the same money problem. And that tends to go on throughout a lifetime. So there has to be supporting counterproductive or ingrained habits taking place in the brain which keep bringing about these same results. So understanding it and changing it are a vastly different environment, but it's great to start working on how we start chopping away at these.
And it's good to know that we actually can overcome them. I mean, it is possible to change the habitual patterns, but it requires some conscious, directed energy. You have to say, okay, I'm going to focus on making these changes. And you have to stick with it for some length of time that really no one can predict in advance how long that will be, because that will vary from person to person. But no matter what your age, no matter how long you've been doing it, you can still do it. And that's the good news.
Well, and I noticed many years ago, and this is a very silly example, but it certainly really touches on how you can change habits. As a child growing up, I never made my bed. And when I went to school...
I still don't.
I still don't, actually, right now. But every day my mom made my bed, or the housekeeper made my bed. And then, later in life, it didn't make any point to make my bed. And so I really went a lifetime with never making my bed. When I got into recovery and I ended up in a halfway house in Florida, one of the simple rules was every day you make your bed. Well, I was determined at that point that I was going to make whatever changes were necessary in my life, and following rules was going to be one of those changes. So I started making my bed. And the habit of, and by the way, as a caveat, making my bed, simply pulling the comforter up and is making the bed.
We're not talking about squared off corners here.
Yeah, exactly. I started doing that. And I was shocked that after about 30 days, that became an ingrained habit, making my bed. And that really taught me something. To this day, all those years later, to this day, I make my bed every day. I pull the comforter up. I have a housekeeper that comes once a week, and she changes my sheets, and she actually has asked me not to make the bed on Mondays when she comes. and my response is, no, I'm going to make it, and you can just get the sheets off. It's just it is now a habit the other way. It's an ingrained habit. And using that really benign example is such an incredible idea, how it can just become part of you again. Or for, anything can. You can start with positive thinking, changing the I can't, that inner dialogue of negative. We're always anticipating the wrong results. Those are thinking patterns that always keep bringing up the wrong side of the law of attraction in your life.
And because we can change them, really what it comes down to is learning how to change them.
Yes.
And for the most part, it's actually just kind of like what you described. I mean, it's literally like making a conscious choice that from now on, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make X happen in my life. In your case, it was making some very serious changes in your life, but they don't have to be really, really death-defying serious stuff. They can be mundane, too. It's just deciding to do it and then doing it.
Exactly. One of the techniques that I often recommend people, and I especially my younger male clients hate this suggestion, is a term called mirror work, where you look into a mirror and you tell yourself positive thoughts. You practice positive thinking, talking to yourself in a mirror.
What is it about mirrors that makes it so difficult for us to look at our own reflection and talk to ourselves?
That is probably a higher pay scale psychiatry type thing than I am able to answer, but it does seem to me that it brings something to the table that isn't there. And that mirror work is, people find it difficult to do, but it can be a great tool in what we're talking about. The 12-step programs often have a phrase of fake it till you make it. Well, that's a great term, where you literally act as if you are a productive person in recovery, and one day you wake up and you are. And we can apply that with a law of attractions. Let's act as if we're positive in the beginning. Let's just play the role of a positive person early. And that comes about to what it makes us a real person.
And one of the things about what you call mirror work, or what I would just call looking in the mirror and talking to myself, is that you get really, really, really quick feedback about how you're talking to yourself. I mean, it's such powerful feedback that literally it can be hard to continue to look at yourself.
Well, it is very difficult, just like you're saying, because that feedback is immediate, and making eye contact with yourself, you're forcing yourself to be honest with yourself. And we don't like that in general. Most of the time we've created scenarios in our mind of why a situation doesn't work or what's going on in our life. And mirror work sort of takes that away and puts the responsibility directly on the person in the mirror. And instead of saying, well, the world's against me, no, your negative thoughts are against you. The world the world doesn't care one way or another.
In fact, just the exercise of looking in the mirror, and like you say, you look in your eyes for a moment and then you just can't keep looking anymore. That alone is probably our best indicator of how positive or negative we are, because the longer we can look, the more positive we are.
Exactly.
The less long we can look or not being able to look at all, that's basically yourself telling you can't be positive. You've just chosen, I got to be negative all the time. And, of course, the results that come out of that are also going to be negative.
Exactly. And that puts us in that unique position where when we start to see the inner dialogue that takes place with us and you call yourself out on it, that's when the mirror tells the truth. Like you're saying, you first look into your eyes and you almost want to look away immediately. It's like,
oh yeah, why? I get this feeling in my chest and my arms, like, oh God, I gotta turn, I gotta do something.
Right, right. It's that uncomfortable moment where you're confronting the person that is causing what you're not wanting in your life. That person is right there.
And there's no escaping it other than to just turn away, which of course defeats the whole purpose of trying to make the change.
Completely. And non-confrontive, people that don't like confrontation, people that are truly in a mindset of sort of denial, that sometimes look in the mirror and it becomes very clear and very obvious that...
Well, I'd say not just people who don't like confrontation. I would include people who do like confrontation.
That's probably a good point. That's a very good point, actually. Yes. The idea that you're confronting this person, and it takes away all of your excuses. You know, I know when I first started hearing about The Secret and the Law of Attraction, and I first thought it was a very soft, easy way of living. I'm like, wow, a woman wrote this book. It's sort of a very soft, easy way. But in truth, the Law of Attraction is putting your life and your situation squarely on your shoulders. It is removing all excuses. And once I understood that, I understood why mirror work became hard, was the excuse has been always something else, and now that had to be removed. I am the reason for my situation, period.
And yet, despite this fact, I think it's also fair to say that we could learn to treat ourselves well and therefore make life easy.
Yes.
I mean, we really could. I mean, that vision that you saw in The Secret, and I saw the same vision of life being easy, it really could be.
It could be.
We can choose that.
Right.
We haven't been choosing it, but we could.
Well, yes, and that the idea that we are accountable, we are our thoughts, we are a product of our decisions over the years, and we almost get a societal view that let's start looking for the excuses for your behavior. Let's start looking for excuses for your failure. One of the areas that I have a very good friend who is very strongly was very strongly opposed to he's a I'm trying to think of the term. I don't want to be inappropriate, but he's gay, and he had for a long time blamed the entire world of why people picked on him. And
that's right out of the movie, practically.
Yeah. My friend Rob, he was over at the house, and he has always viewed his sexuality as being a very negative thing. That everybody picked on him. Everybody, he was miserable, and I got really tired of hearing this victim role from him for years. Again, an outstanding friend, but I told him, I said, Rob, nobody cares. And he just sat back and was sort of angry at me for a second. And I said, your sexuality is such a small piece of your life, but you've made it such the point of your life. And then anybody that doesn't agree or sees it differently, you give them all the power. I said, if you go to you're in the South and you're hanging out with some redneck bar and somebody says something that, you know, you're gay and you take offense to that versus being in a place where other people are accepting, you almost seek out the people who are going to be negative towards you. And that was a click in his mind that he was able to sort of let all that go and become comfortable with himself and not allow himself to be a victim anymore. Those redundant thinking patterns or counterproductive habits, they take place of, they put the in our brain that we're victims, and society supports that. Society looks for reasons for us to, well, it's not your fault because of this. And these are really difficult times for a lot of people, when, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on bullying, there's a lot of emphasis on a lot of areas. In reality, when we understand we create our environment, that is an uncomfortable position. That's why the law of attraction is so, it puts us in such a responsible position for our own actions and our own situations. And so getting back to the mirror work, I think that becomes part of why it's so difficult is we look at that person and say, wow, I did this. This is my world that I created with my decisions. It's my world to change when I realize I can change it by changing my thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely true. And in fact, as you're talking there, I'm thinking about that segment during the movie The Secret, in the book The Secret, where one of the presenters talked about a gay man that he was working with who had exactly the same issue. And as he helped the man realize, first of all, that he had the issue and helped him to understand how to make changes, amazing things started to happen. Up until then, he could walk down the street and instantly be bullied by somebody about being gay. His co-workers would give him a hard time all the time. I mean, everything in his life was miserable about it. And then he changed his whole thought process, and almost immediately the results started to happen. Nobody bothered him on the street anymore. The co-workers who gave him a hard time either changed jobs, got fired, or moved to another office, and he started to enjoy his work again. He was a stand-up comic, and he used to get booed because he was gay, and then he got up afterward after he changed his mindset, started doing his routines, and they loved him. It was all really, really quick. That when you watch that, particularly in the movie The Secret, as opposed to reading it in the book, when you watch it in the movie, it's really striking the change that this man experienced in his life. Now, granted, the movie was presenting to you a set-up version of it, but the story behind it still comes through loud and clear. I mean, it's something that it seems remarkable, and yet I think every person, if they really, really think about it, if they look back over their own lives, they can think of times when either accidentally or on purpose, they changed their mindset about something that was perhaps not quite so consequential, and the stuff changed. Well, if you can do that with mundane stuff, you can do it with the stuff that's constantly on your mind all the time, bringing you the wrong results.
What makes it difficult for a lot of people is when society is giving the opposite message of what the law of attraction is trying to bring to you, that creates this. That's why so many people, I think, have a difficult time. When we look at the news, your initial perception of the world right now, if you go turn on any of the big news networks, is we are in a horrible position in life right now. I mean, yes,
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Every day
I'm amazed the world hasn't ended by now.
Version of everything being over. And in reality, things are really only as good or as only as bad as you allow them to be with your thoughts. And we buy into what we're being sold, and that is a reinforcer of these negative, counterintuitive type thought processes, which keep reinforcing the negative. I have a young lady that her mom called me, and she's from a wealthy family, but she's 26 now, and she's been out of the house for a while, and has fallen. She got into a drug habit. She fortunately got out of drugs and is in recovery, which really, really proud of her. But she has a condition called fibromyalgia. Yeah. And that's where your nerve endings flare up, and it just, you're in constant pain. Yeah, and there's a debate whether the pain is physical or mental, but there's no debate that the pain is real. Let's be clear about that. The mom wanted me to talk with her, and the first thing she said was, "Well, I'm on disability." And I said, "For my fibromyalgia." And I said, "Well, okay." I said, "That's really not relevant, but let's keep talking." And she kept going back to any suggestion that I was making would be, "Well, I'm on disability, so I can't get a job," or "I'm on disability, I can't do this," or "I'm on disability." And she...
Thus basically proving just how ingrained she was in the idea of being a victim, and also ingrained in the idea that there was nothing she could do to change it. And of course,
that was probably two or three weeks of us meeting where I could not break through the heavy defense wall of "I'm a victim of this." And she kept saying fibromyalgia is real. And I kept saying, "I know it is. It is real. I know you're in pain. You're not getting a debate from me that you're not in pain." But apparently you have... Well,
what's wrong with you? You should be debating her. I'm sure that's what her mindset was. Her mindset was basically, you should be getting into this struggle with me, because that's how I keep the struggle going.
Almost the question that you just said. I said, "So do you want me to debate you?" And I said, "I don't understand why you need me to debate you. You keep telling me your fibromyalgia is real. I keep acknowledging that I know how incredibly painful it must be, because multiple people that I've worked with have had it. And I just can't imagine living in that unbelievable pain. But yet you keep telling me it's real. So I've acknowledged to you that it's real, but where is your struggle?" And what we were able to do is, she said, her waking thought in the morning was pain. And that was her thought process for the day. Yes.
Understandably so. She's got herself into a very heavily ingrained habit, which is what our topic is here. And when it's ingrained like that, for the moment you wake up in the morning, the habit says, time to go. Here we go. Day's started.
The entire point of her existence is her pain. And as we were able to start talking and getting, and I said, "If you didn't have this pain, what would you be doing?" That's finally how I started to break through. Then I could get her to say, "Okay, if I didn't have the pain, here's the stuff I would like to start doing." And as we progressed over the next several weeks, we started switching from, here's what I'm going to start doing. Here's what, and it started with her, you know, getting out and literally walking to the mailbox every day. That's how small of a start we had. At, right.
Hey, but it's so a huge start because it was.
We then started. I got her to tell me a story about a hilarious story that happened when she was 16. It was a very funny story. And she told the story for about 20 minutes. And I stopped her at the end of the 20 minutes and I said, and immediately said, without thinking, how much pain are you in right now? And she said, none. She said, for 20 minutes. And she said, now, as soon as you ask me that, I'm back in pain.
Sure, because it brought the thing back to her attention. But nevertheless, for that one moment in time, that 20-minute period, all of a sudden the pain went away. And the really remarkable part is that she didn't notice until you pointed it out.
Yes. And so at that point, she's like, oh, my goodness. She said, for the first time in years, I just had 20 minutes without pain. And I said, well, maybe you've had more time without pain than you realize, but you just weren't able to have anybody point it out to you. And exactly.
Or you hadn't pointed it out to yourself.
Progressed, I said, so I have to, will you agree with me that if you can figure out how to get 20 minutes without pain, we can get 30 minutes without pain? And she said, oh, yeah, that would be doable. I said, if we do 30 minutes, maybe we can do an hour. And obviously, we would keep trying to increase that. After 6 months, her change in attitude toward her pain, her change in it, she was on a few different medications. I said, I think they may be hurting. I don't know if they're helping, but you need to talk to your doctor, of course, because I am not a doctor. But it just seems to me that to be in that much pain, why would you want to be on three medicines to be in that much pain? If you're going to.
Yeah, not much point. Right. If you're going to take the medicine, you might as well get benefits.
And that dawned on
her. If you're not getting a benefit, then why take them?
You know, I finally got her into the gym and started getting her workout. In the beginning, it was very painful for her to do that. But as she started breaking through that initial resistance to the pain, we started redefining what pain was. And her perception, this is her perception, not mine, is pain is for her was... she's always been in pain. She said, I'm still in pain, but I've redefined the point of pain. I'm not controlled by the pain anymore. I'm having a good life now. And she started to believe that. So the pain is no longer a controlling force. She's not on medication. And she said, I debate whether I'm really in pain anymore because I've changed my perspective on it so much that she knows technically I know it hasn't gone away, but it doesn't affect my life anymore. She's for taking the big leap of getting next month of getting off her disability, and which she's, you know, I actually cautioned her. I said,
wow.
Make sure, because it's a difficult thing to get back on. And I didn't want to, you know, put her in a place of where she's like, no, I'm confident with this. And giving the Social Security disability a little credit, they do have this back to work program for a while to make sure you can really get back to work and without losing your disability. So she's going to enroll in that. And she's on her way, but her life has changed. And the only thing that really changed, Walt, was, once again, as all these stories that we tell, is her perception or stopping the ingrained habit of the ingrained thought pattern of, I am pain. My definition of my life is pain. That's no longer her definition. Yes.
Yeah, now her definition still includes pain, which means she has a ways to go, but the fact that she no longer is dominated by it, that she now recognizes that she can actually set herself up to have periods in her life that are pain-free, first of all, and perhaps even larger periods in her life where the pain is dramatically reduced without taking extra medicine, actually taking less medication. Once she understands that she's done that, then she's laid that groundwork to make it possible for her to actually declare the impossible declaration. Despite the fact that she's still feeling the pain, to declare the declaration that she's pain-free. And the dissonance in that is tremendous, But she's now getting to the point where she can handle that. And once she can handle that, and she can actually get herself to start doing it every day, even though she's saying to herself, boy, this is really dumb. I know I'm feeling the pain, but I'm pain-free. All that kind of thing. Which both you and I have been through, and others listening in have been through. It seems ridiculous at first. And yet, once you can get to that point where you start trying to believe it, trying to say it, trying to live it, trying to vibrate it, over time, you establish a new habit just by sticking to the ideal, no matter how crazy it seems, that you're pain-free or whatever it is that you're trying to overcome. And indeed, one of the tricks that I like to use when I'm trying to deal with something like this is try to find a replacement word. Instead of pain-free, something that expresses it more positively. So right. Feeling well, good one of the or things something that along
we're
that
actually
line.
Talking, we're not allowed to use the word pain. It is a reinforcer of the health is what we're striving for. I'm feeling healthy. I feel healthy today. And with using descriptions and keeping the negative out of the description, you eventually take the power of that away. And I am often amazed at the number of people that when I actually tell that story, if I'm talking to a group or I tell stories similar to that, the number of people that defend their pain, they get very upset. Oh, and I'm suggesting that this is in their head. And
well, you know what really annoys me is when I start defining my own fill-in-the-blank, whatever negative habit that I have developed that I'm trying to get away from, and I immediately notice myself defending my own negative habit. And what's even worse is I keep doing it, and I say to myself in my head, what the heck am I doing here? And I hear the words coming out of my mouth, and I can feel my passion as I'm telling somebody else about how terrible this thing is that continues to be in my life, and that little voice is saying,
and that is one of the amazing things. That's why we started the show with the term ingrained thoughts, those negative ingrained thinking patterns, and that's why we defend them. They're there. We're defending them as if they're fact, and those thinking patterns are so supportive of sort of attracting the exact opposite. We keep seeing the same events happen in our life when you keep having the same relationship over and over, and even the same reason we keep breaking up over and over and over, it tells you that we're having ingrained thoughts, we're ingrained habits, ingrained behaviors, all attached to we own that. And it really is counterproductive, and it does keep inviting the other stuff. And it is and when we talk about it, it's certainly doable, but it's not as easy as just flipping a switch either.
It's not, no. But inevitably, what we're doing is flipping the switch. Sometimes we're having to push with all our might against that switch.
Yes.
But it's still flipping a switch. And the sooner that we recognize that we're just flipping a switch, then all of a sudden flipping the switch becomes easier. But up until that switch can seem to weigh 5,000 pounds.
You can do it without any effort. It's just, boom, a switch. It's the built-in resistance, hence the word ingrained. It is in us. That's what makes that switch seem so impossible to do. And it really, what motivates us? What are we able to find that button inside of us to just simply press it and say, okay, I'm there? The law of attraction doesn't respond. It doesn't have a time limit or a time frame. It only operates in the time frame that you provide for it. If you don't believe this can happen instantly, it certainly can't. But when you do really honestly believe it, it does happen immediately.
What's really great, too, although it takes a while to notice that it's great, but what's really great is when the thing is absent, whatever that negative thing is. And I don't know how it works for you. I imagine it works somewhat similar to the way it works for me. But when I've reached a point where all of a sudden that thing is gone, the first thing that happens is I don't notice it. And then I go on for a bit and, oh, wait a minute. It was gone. It was gone then. In fact, it's still gone. What was it that was gone? It was the pain. It was the drug. It was the addiction. It was the attraction. It was the horrible thing that's been going on. And it's not happening right and now.
If That's you really look weird. Back, if we could go back 1 year from today and look at what was bothering us then, we overcame that. We survived it. We worried about it. We played with it. But whatever it was seems incredibly insignificant now. But at the time, it was getting a lot of our attention. And now we have survived it. You know, if we were worried about financial stuff a year ago, we got through it. That's sort of impressive. If I was worried about a health issue or something, I got through it. If I was worried about a relationship, I got through it. Now that relationship may be over, but it didn't destroy me. And the idea right. that we – I always start off with people. And one of the first things I say is you have an incredible track record. You are 100% successful at surviving what you thought would kill you. We are all 100% successful of getting through stuff we didn't believe we could get through. We're here. We survived it. Now, we might have come out, you know, might have been an ugly landing, but we're here. And
one of the most common things you hear people say is, you don't get out of this life alive. Wouldn't it be interesting if the most common thing we heard was, I'm still here. No matter what I've been through, no matter what stuff I may have set myself up for, I made it. I'm still here.
That same opportunity, and we're here. And we have another shot at it. We have another day. We look at it with, you know, the inevitable. Most people view life with the inevitable. Like you're saying, you don't get out of this alive. Well, I don't know that. I have no evidence of that. I know what everybody else is telling me, but for me, I'm not living that way. I have survived whatever life has thrown at me, and it's strengthened me. It's made me stronger. I have no doubt that I can survive whatever life throws at me and come out on the other side of it. I have evidence of that.
In fact, not only were you going to survive,
I
can thrive.
That.
I'm an example of that.
I'm better off for all the stuff that I went through. I have survived. I have thrived. During my addiction, when I was convicted of a felony for theft over 20 years ago, I remember thinking that was the end of my life. There's nothing, I will never do anything outside of labor. I've destroyed my life. I didn't think it was possible. That same felony conviction has now become a credential. It's something that.
Which is really weird when you're going through it. The idea that,
right.
that it could become a credential.
It gives me credibility with my clients who are experiencing the same thing. When they understand, here's what I went through, here's what I've overcame, they relate to me so much better than somebody that just read all this stuff in a book. I lived it. I did it. I pulled myself out of it. It can be done. I'm an example of to some people of how it can be done. So I've established that. That's why they come to me.
And not only can it be done, it's done every single day of the week.
Yes.
And not by one or two people either. Millions of people do it every single day.
That's the thing that you have to, you focus on the what I can do, what's out there. The ingrained thoughts remind you of what you can't do. It keeps you stuck. The programming in our brain, if I could invent a magical device that would allow me to delete all of the negative events that are leading up to the self-doubt that goes on in someone, that would be an incredible tool. Now, I wouldn't want them to lose it forever, but I would like them to live without it for a little while so they would say, and so they wouldn't stop limiting themselves in what they believe.
Or at least to have a tool that
yes.
enables you to erase the ingrained habit. Because if you could erase the ingrained habit even for a short period of time, like you say, you could actually experience what it's like to not have it, to live without it, to actually feel better. And indeed, we have the tool. The tool exists. It's choice. It's what we choose to think about. It seems bizarre, too. How can it be something that stupidly simple? I mean, choosing what you think about. Well, we can choose what we think about. Well, good. Then we do it. So why is it then that we think about what we're choosing to think about for 5 minutes and then spend the next 5 hours thinking about everything but what we should be thinking about? Well, we're living our lives. And there's the challenge. The challenge isn't to think about it for 5 minutes. The challenge is to think about what it is that you really want to be thinking about, the good stuff, the stuff that you want to live by, and to do it integrated with everything that you're doing throughout the day. So as I'm going through my day, my big challenge is when I sit down to the computer to do my computer work, I am also doing so with a mindset that says this is going to work. And when I get on the phone to talk to somebody, I get on with the mindset that says this is going to be a good conversation. And when I get up to go do the dishes after dinner, I do so with the mindset not of, oh, God, I have to do the dishes again, but, wow, we're going to have nice, clean dishes when we're done. This is a good thing. I'm going to have a good mindset doing that. That's the trick, integrating it every moment of every day.
I reminded myself of something, and it didn't dawn on me until yesterday, but last Friday, last Friday was Friday the 13th, and I didn't realize while it was happening that day, but I giving you a little backstory, I have a few pieces of property in Florida that are just vacant lots in the rural part of Florida. And I've been meaning to get rid of these for a while. I pay taxes on them. I will never build on them. They're not going up in value, or if any at all, maybe a tiny bit. But they're not something that I really need to be having. And it, really, there's a liability attached to me owning them if somebody got hurt on those properties. If somebody dumped a bunch of trash on that property,
oh, sure.
You know, I'm responsible to have all that cleaned up. So you know, I said, I have been thinking I need to get rid of those. Well, the things aren't worth, they're probably worth $4,000 a piece. And so not really even worth a real estate person listing them. So I keep thinking I'm in Florida. I got to get down to Florida. I got to get down there and get these things sold. And my insurance agents actually told me and my attorney said, you really need to get those things sold. So Friday the 13th, true story, Walt, I get a random call from a lady, she's a realtor down in the county that I have these lots. She said, you have vacant lots in Lake County. I said, I do. And she said, well, I'm a developer and I'm looking to buy these lots. Randomly.
Wow.
And I said, okay, well,
oh my goodness.
I'm willing to take, you know, I would be willing to take, you know, I think the tax value on them are $5,000. I'd gladly taken for three lots, you know, taking $7,500. She said, well, you know, would you agree to the tax value on each? I'm like, yes, I would. I would. Thank you. And I couldn't believe this random thing. And I didn't know if this was a scam. And I was even a little skeptical because it just, this is random. So she said, well, I've looked at the properties and, you know, I realized that, you know, one of them went on a paved road and there was a couple of little things. She said, well, you know, what if I gave you $10,000 for all of them? I'm like, I will accept that, yes. And again, not know how to do it. Well, she overnighted me the papers and we're taking care of this deal. It's amazing. This happened on Friday the 13th.
Fantastic.
The reason I tell that story, and I didn't really equate it to happening on Friday the 13th till I had a little bit of time to think about it. So many people anticipate that as a bad day. And I've always viewed it as sort of a good day for me. I don't know why. I've never thought of it as a bad day. And
well,
right,
most people who think
right.
it's a bad
and
day
so
don't know why it's a bad
just
day
was,
either.
It just reinforces with me that I look forward to Friday the 13th. I think it's historically for me has been a good day. It's nothing ever bad's happened that I can remember on that day. So I enjoy Friday the 13th, but I always see everybody that really is anticipating a bad day. And I'm shocked at the number of people that I'll hear, oh, it's Friday the 13th, what do you expect? And it's like, wow, really? You really believe that? But a few people do. But I really believe it's going to be a great day. And that ingrained habit of you know, I sold property that I didn't even have to list. I didn't have to pay a realtor. I got more than I would have sold them for. I was pretty impressed with all of that. And
I wonder if those people, not to go off topic here, but I wonder if those people, and there are many, many of them, who believe that Friday the 13th is bad, and they bemoan Friday the 13th when it comes along. I wonder how many of them realize that they have enslaved themselves
to
Friday the
13th.
Not many
people realize that they've enslaved themselves to these redundant patterns or the ingrained thinking patterns. I mean, that's the bigger picture. When you wake up anticipating a certain, once again, doesn't matter if it's good or bad, whether you're, I'm waking up in pain tomorrow.
What a plan. I'm going to make up my plan tomorrow. Wake up in pain in the morning.
This is by no means belittling them. It's just what has happened. They've made allotment for pain in their life tomorrow. Pain is going to be there. If I make allotment for, if I'm planning on these things to happen, a bad day tomorrow is, you know, I used to, when I was in the insurance business with my father years ago, Mondays, I hated Mondays for a whole bunch of reasons. Well, I used to say, oh, Monday's always so bad. Well, it was. Every Monday was horrible. I mean, it was truly, I would come home with migraine headaches. It was just, Mondays were awful back then. And I was anticipating that. So long after I left that business, and by the way, all those problems were my fault, so it wasn't Monday's fault, it was my fault. All those years later, I used to say, oh, here comes Monday. And it dawned on me, well, Mondays are actually pretty awesome. I get to go do what I love. I look forward to Mondays. I don't distinguish Saturday and Sunday really any differently. I like Mondays. And once you start not programming automatic default negative thinking patterns, it's shocking what can happen in your life and what does happen. What does happen in your life. And I want our audience to realize that these ingrained patterns, they're not your fault, because a lot of them were passed down from generations. I mean, it's stuff that you hear that. There's studies that indicate,
true, yeah.
We can do a whole show on this, but it's in our DNA on some level, and it's passed down that way. Yes.
Or at the very least, it's passed down.
Yeah, there's a doctor who's actually doing a study of how negativity seems to have some genetic predisposition in certain families. And so I'm looking forward to his when his study does come out, that it's such a years of culturally, there's certain cultures that are very negative in their thinking, and almost because it's almost taught as a skill to be negative, because the idea of suffering is honorable in some cultures. So they.
Oh, I can think of an example of that in my own life, because my parents were what are known as depression children. They grew up in the 30s, the 1930s, and they passed along to me very effectively the depression mentality, which is you never throw anything away, you value everything in terms of making sure that you hang on to everything. It's not necessarily a healthy valuing, it's an unhealthy valuing. And you always assume that there's not going to be enough money around, and there's not going to be enough to get by on. In fact, all you think about is just getting by, because that's what you do when you have that depression mentality. They passed it along really effectively to me, and my job has been to learn
and
to change
becomes,
that mindset.
First of all, I love that example, because it is such an accurate example that families pass down struggles with money, families pass down struggles with relationships. They you know, you keep seeing kids of divorced parents more than often become divorced themselves. It's amazing that so many people repeat almost the same lives as their families, because that's what was ingrained in them early. And it really is an ongoing sort of a self-fulfilling negative prophecy a lot of times. But families that have struggled with money have traditionally struggled with money all those years. And it.
In fact, one of the best examples that I remember noticing early on in my exploration of the law of attraction was something that was from where I used to live and where you live in Virginia. At least that's where it was originally based. The television show, The Waltons, was based on the experiences of the lead author of the program, who lived, his name is Earl Hamner, lived in Virginia in the Blue Ridge Mountains, about an hour south of Charlottesville. And when you watch the TV series and watch them as they went through the Depression and through the Warriors and so forth, boy, watch it from a law of attraction perspective sometime, because it's amazing how often their dialogue reinforces their poverty, reinforces their hardship, reinforces all the things that they're dealing with that become the fodder for the shows that they did. And it's like every episode is like that. You get this constant reinforcement watching this thing. So right, on the one exactly. hand, I'm saying don't watch it because it's not good for you. but on the other hand, boy, is it educational to watch it and just see the pattern happening over and over.
We saw it after on a lesser scale than the Great Depression. We saw it after September 11th in our country. We saw the planes fly into the building.
Oh yes,
and then we saw immediately. Everybody said, well, the economy's going to fall apart. Well, I don't really understand what planes flying into the building have to do with the economy, other than people's perceptions of things went from good to bad pretty quick. And I know several people in South Carolina. There was a big plant that used to make steering wheels for Mercedes-Benz. Well, you know, these were high-paying jobs. Several people I know worked there. And after the planes hit, auto sales went way down. People's perspective of the economy went way down. People quit buying Mercedes-Benz, so they didn't need new steering wheels. So these people get laid off, and they quit their gym memberships. They had to cut back on their stuff. And it just became a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that everybody was talking. And all that really changed was our attitude toward what happened.
Yeah. That's the hardest part, I think, for people who are still traumatized by 9/11 to remember.
Yes.
Which is, they lived through it. They didn't get personally attacked. They saw people being attacked, but they didn't personally get attacked. And in fact, the overwhelming majority of the nation did not get personally attacked. So any lasting vestiges of the attack
Absolutely.
Are self-induced. And that's
well,
kind
we were
of
traumatized as a country every time they showed that planes or both planes flying into those buildings over on a loop.
Oh, they love showing that footage. Oh my goodness!
We loved watching it because we watched it nonstop.
Well, actually, I have to admit, that was one time I was healthy. I did not love watching it. I didn't want to keep watching it. In fact, I wanted to get away from all the coverage as much as I could. Unfortunately, I couldn't get away from it constantly, but most of the time I stayed away from it because I could tell it was toxic.
What freaked me out was that first day or so, and I don't remember this exactly, but I mean, every station, ESPN, they all went to coverage. They all went to whatever their network affiliate was, and they took the regular programming off TV. And the entire nation, I do believe, mm-hmm. and I'm pretty confident, I'm accurate, say that even the Cartoon Network for a day went to news. I remember my son at the time was like, "What is this, Dad?" I'm like, "Son, something bad happened to our country." I said, "Let's watch videos." I said, "You're safe. But we got some videos. We'll play some
Good
video
move.
Games. Let's not not do this." But it really was ingrained, like you're saying, that it becomes such a negative, and we're traumatized by that. And there's several studies that have been duplicated around the world where they will put read your pain receptors in the brain. They put you on a brain scan, and you can watch someone receive an injury. Like break a leg, for example, in a sporting event, your brain registers the pain even though it didn't happen to you. It spikes when you watch it. Mm-hmm. The pain receptors go off in your head. There's a little trauma when you see that stuff happen. Again, that gets ingrained as well. So we have spent a lifetime. Our families have unintentionally downloaded their negative stuff to us. We have downloaded it to our kids often. And we live in this environment where so much is ingrained, and fighting against it is it seems so hard, But at the same time, it is really easy. But it's our perspective that makes it seem so difficult.
Yeah, our perspective makes it difficult, and our belief that we have to keep focusing on it makes it really difficult. I mean, when you have to keep focusing on the same negative thing over and over and over and over again, assuming you don't suicide, you're just going to be miserable all the time. And that's what we do when we end up focusing on this same traumatic stuff over and over and over again. Literally, you have to do what you did with your son. You have to change the channel to something that isn't showing the negative stuff. And if you can't find a channel that's not showing the negative stuff, you turn the TV off and you find something else right. That does give you the positive stuff. Because until you change the channel, you're just going to continue to be inundated, continue to be in pain, continue to hurt, continue to experience the same trauma and re-experience it and re-experience it on endlessly. Yeah, there's a new word, endless. Endlessly.
What I do like is an example also that I think it was two summers ago. We had an unusually hot summer here in Virginia. And we had like 6 days in a row that was over 100 degrees. And while it was certainly uncomfortable, it wasn't that big of a deal. Every single person I encountered, all they could talk about was how hot it was. As if that were going to be news to me. Can you believe how hot it is? Yeah, it's warm out there. And yeah.
And then the funny part is you could say to them, yes, I believe it, and it doesn't stop them at all.
Mind. Now, it was 2 degrees above normal or whatever it was, but it just, because it broke a number that everybody was very focused on, and it was 5 days in a row, we kept talking about it. Well, I noticed it more because that was on everybody's topic. It versus the idea that, one of my gurus that I was working with, he said, just put some nice cold pictures of some snow on your phone and look at them throughout the day and just envision that it's not that bad. And once...
Or go to your non-frost-free refrigerator and pull some frosty ice and hold it. Boy, that'll make you feel cold.
From that point, first of all, I have a central heat and air in my house. It gets very cool. Regardless of how hot it was outside, everywhere I go is air-conditioned. I don't see it being that big of a deal. But it became the topic, so that the lead story on the news that night, Central Virginia hits the sixth day in a row with 100-degree temperatures. It's like, really, that's our lead story, huh? And it just reinforced. It was certainly hot without them talking about it, but the reinforcers attached and the negative going along with it, it becomes what we're focused on. And
sadly, the TV cameras wouldn't melt in that heat. Otherwise, we wouldn't have to keep watching it. But nevertheless, we can still turn the channel.
Internally, we can turn the channel as well. We don't have to keep having these ingrained thoughts and realize all you have to do is change the channel, press the button, new thoughts.
Because what we're ultimately talking about here is, are we going to stick with our default behavior of responding to internal stimuli, or are we going to decide to choose our own stimuli? That's really what it comes down to. We live our lives, most of us, by default, responding to the stimuli that comes to us from outside of ourselves, and we figure that's the way life has to be. And the message here is, no, it's not. We can actually choose our own stimuli. We can choose what we're going to pay attention to, and in the course of making that choice, change our lives dramatically.
That is such a I love the choice factor in this. We have this choice, and that's what people don't understand. It's like the lady with fibromyalgia. She didn't understand she had a choice in this. Or she didn't have a choice with some of it, but she had a choice of where her focus went. And the ongoing improvement is such a incredible thing to watch when people learn that my focus needs to change. One of the greatest disabilities that a person has in life is being on disability. It is the most reinforcing negative I've ever seen. I always say, because I will have that one or two people that will be sitting home, there are certain people, through for whatever reason, they're in a position profoundly mentally disturbed, whatever, that they are not able to work. And I'm glad that we provide a safety net for them. I really do. But I would say the vast majority of the people on disability are there, and it's really a big detriment. They will never fulfill their life goals because they're given just enough to survive, but not near enough to thrive.
And it's not just disability. Yes. It's any negative pattern. Disability is a self-reinforcing one that is provided by the government. Not the only one, by the way. There are a lot of them that the government provides. But the point is that it's a negative pattern that's being reinforced. And that's the key. You have to pay attention to where are my negative patterns being reinforced, and then get yourself, ultimately, this is what the mirror thing is about, where are my negative patterns being reinforced by me? Because when you can get to that point, when you can say honestly to yourself, you know what, I'm the one who's been doing this to myself. I'm the one who's been giving myself these negative patterns. I'm the one who keeps looking at the bad relationships and how I'm going to have more bad relationships. I'm the one who continues to believe that the fibromyalgia is painful and I'm going to experience pain every day. I'm the one who believes that I have cancer. I'm the one who believes that I don't have money. I'm the one who believes. I'm the one who believes. I'm the one who believes. Well, if we're the ones that believe, we can also choose to believe that we feel good, that we're healthy, that we have lots of money, that we have great friends, that our relationships are wonderful, that when we go out and enjoy the day, we actually enjoy the day, that we don't have to be inundated by all these negatives, that we can actually have a positive life, and that it doesn't have to be hard.
It can be easy. Yes, and it's choice.
Wow. What a change that is.
And that's what makes – that's why people make it so difficult – is it's that easy, and it can't be that easy. They keep thinking it can't be that easy. It has to be harder than this. I was instilled you have to struggle. Struggle is good. Struggle is suffering is a positive. And I tell people that struggle and suffering is a choice. And again, that's another thing that people don't like to hear. I think I mentioned this on the show before, but I have a several people, Eastern European friends from my powerlifting circuit, and one is a very good guy. He's a Polish gentleman, and we were at an event somewhere, and someone had said, you know, okay, well, I'll
you got to be really quick. Let me just say,
the Polish people have never suffered. They've endured. That was his percentage and his perspective, and he loved it.
And Joel, I love the fact that I'm going to be spending this next week living with the belief that I control my environment.
My environment
does not control me. Joel, it's been a pleasure as usual, and we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.